The following is a pre-recorded program.
Some interesting interaction between Piers Morgan and Candace Owens. What should we make of it?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, this is Michael Brown. Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on The Line of Fire. If you follow our channel, if you follow my articles, you know that we're not into clickbait and just trying to be sensationalistic, but we do deal with lots of controversial issues and tackle things by name when appropriate. So some folks reached out to me and said, Dr. Brown, have you seen this interaction with Candace Owens on Piers Morgan show? And issues about anti-Semitism, etc. Candace Owens has been accused of anti-Semitism. Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, who's a good friend of mine, but with whom I don't always agree in terms of tactics and approach, he and Candace Owens have had an ongoing battle for a while. So I was sent the links and some clips, and we pulled a few clips to interact with. Now, here's the deal. I know the general content from outline, but I decided to hear the actual clips for the first time now. So I'm going to be reacting to them in real time. Also, a little later in the broadcast, I'm going to respond to some questions that were posted on X, Jewish-related questions. And for those listening live on this Thursday, if you are anywhere in the New York area, join me for a special event, Combating Anti-Semitism with Mitch Glazer, A.R. Bernard, and some wonderful worship right in New York City. You can get more details on our website, thelineoffire.org. Click on itinerary. And when you're there, if you're not getting our monthly frontline newsletter, inspirational, informational, impartational, it'll bless you, it'll encourage you, from the testimonies to the Hebrew word study to the main message, by all means, sign up today. It's free, it's digital, so you can read it on any platform. Go to thelineoffire.org and click on subscribe. Okay, I'm going to play five different clips. And I know the general content, but I'm hearing them so I can react to them in real time. For the very first time, Piers Morgan and Candace Owens.
And do you think, for the record, that what Israel's been doing constitutes genocide?
Well, what I've been having trouble is all of the people that are pro-Israel and say it's not a genocide won't tell me what is a genocide. How many, what percentage of a population has to be killed before we can use the word genocide? It's a funny little thing. They won't tell you. They won't tell you what constitutes genocide. So I would like a clear understanding of how many Palestinians have to die before we are allowed to term it a genocide. All of the experts can't agree on what a genocide actually is, but they love to float around the word on virtually every other issue. You know, I had Rabbi Barclay on my show, on one of my last shows when I was on the Daily Wire, and I asked him that question pointedly, what is genocide? Mm. Let us know, experts, what percentage of the population of Palestinians has to be killed before we are allowed to say that it's genocide? What I can tell you is I am completely uncomfortable and utterly against the amount of Palestinian innocent lives that have been lost in this conflict, particularly children. And any person who is fearful of stating that the death of innocent children has been utterly unacceptable is a coward.
I mean, listen, I completely agree, but do you personally think it constitutes genocide, which is the deliberate...
Well, what I'm saying to you is I have pursued on my show,
yeah.
What is the number?
No, I understand.
What is the official number? That's it. That means somebody tell me and I'll give you an answer.
Well, I don't
Nobody
think there is a specific...
Try it when you have...
Well, it's not about a number.
People on both sides of the debate on...
Yeah, but it's not...
What do you mean it's not a number?
Here's my answer.
Do they give you an answer?
Well, no, because here's the point. It's not about specific numbers. It's about an intent.
But it has to be.
Well, no, it's not. It's about an intent to eradicate.
That's not true, Piers, because in America, they say that Native Americans, it was a genocide committed by white men. This is what they say, right?
No, but I'm talking about what the definition of a genocide is.
But what I'm telling you is that would be incorrect because the majority of Native Americans died from smallpox. It was accidental. Some 90% of Native Americans that lived here died from smallpox, and it's considered a genocide.
No, I understand. I'm telling you what the definition of genocide is, which is not about a specific number in any circumstance. It's about an intent to target and eradicate a whole people based on their ethnicity.
All right, so we've addressed this before. It is wrong, it is immoral, it is incorrect to accuse Israel of committing genocide against the Palestinians, against the people of Gaza on every level.
Number one, it is absolutely not the intent of the IDF to wipe out the people of Gaza. If they wanted to do that, they could easily do it. They could just bomb them into oblivion in a matter of days, and they've got nowhere to go or flee. Israel could easily do it. If Israel had the intent to do, say, what the Nazis did to the Jews of Europe, then everyone in Gaza, every Palestinian, virtually everyone, would be wiped out in a matter of days. So it's obviously not the intent. When Israel drops tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of flyers in areas saying, we're going to be bombing here to attack terrorists, you need to move to another location. When they help them relocate, as they did getting out of Rafah in southern Gaza, when they help them relocate in recent weeks, almost a million people, that is not intent to commit genocide. When they make cell phone calls to homes saying, or apartment buildings, you have terrorists in your building, we're going to bomb the building, get out. When they send text messages, because they have the technology to do that, that is the opposite of genocide. That's the first thing. The second thing is that when you look at numbers, when you look at overall numbers, the population of Gaza has grown dramatically in recent decades, as has the population in Judea, Samaria, so-called West Bank, the occupied or the disputed territories, grown dramatically. The Arab Israelis, so Palestinians living in Israel, have gone from roughly 200,000 to about 2 million. And the overall population of Palestinians from 1948, those would identify as Palestinians now, from 1948 until 2024, living in the land, that has gone up exponentially. You say, well, it's high birth rate. It's not just high birth rate. Is that they're not being annihilated and wiped out by Israel. Then when you look at the actual numbers, even if we use Hamas figures, now recently Hamas had to say, well, they can't verify things, and even the UN drastically dropped the numbers. So, but let's just say you use the Hamas numbers, the numbers they're reporting, and let's say you put the death toll at around 37,000. Let's say you use that. All right, first thing is Israel says 15,000 of those people were terrorists. So now you reduce it to about 22,000. Out of that, Hamas includes people who died for any reason. So you're going to have, with a population that size, just on average, about 1,000 people dying a month, with roughly 2 million people there. It's a younger population, so the number's going to be a little lower. So you have to deduct that. So you end up, let's just say a very high number of casualties of 20,000 civilians unrelated to Hamas, mainly women and children, dying result of the war. Let's just say that, which to me is a very high number overall, but let's just use that number. So with a population of about 2 million, one-tenth would be 200,000. One-hundredth would be about 20,000. So if about one-hundredth of the people have been killed in the war, under no conceivable definition, intent or anything else, could you refer to this as a genocide, as opposed to Hitler murdering 6 million out of 9 million Jews, or 3 million out of 3.3 million Jews in Poland, etc., or Pol Pot killing maybe one quarter of his entire population? So the numbers are, there's no comparison. In terms of intent, it's clearly not there. So to say that the number of children killed is unacceptable, and anyone who doesn't say that is a coward, well, it's on Hamas. It's on Hamas for doing what they did, attacking Israel as they did, and for embedding themselves in civilian populations. Now, once we get all that discussed, then we can say, can Israel do better? Then we could say, are there ways that Israel could have avoided some civilian casualties? We could address all those questions once we throw out the false, libelous, wrong, on every level, charge of genocide. Okay, back to this next clip, a little bit shorter. Again, I'm hearing the full content. I have the overview, but I'm hearing the full content for the first time and responding to it. Shorter clip, Piers Morgan and Candace Owens.
When it comes to the topic of Israel, it does seem that journalists are fearful to critique Israel.
Well, I'm
not
at all.
Why is that? Because I would say, Piers, that you too, you seem a little fearful to critique Israel and to want to always seem that you're coming across a little bit understanding of everything they're doing. What is it that makes journalists, fearful of saying, hey, you know, Israel has done a ton of things that have been very wrong?
Yes, and I have said they're wrong. I think Netanyahu should go.
I think half of that cabinet should go, because some of them have definitely been using genocidal language. I think a lot of what Israel's been doing in the last few weeks is completely unacceptable. But ultimately, I also, from the start of this conflict, believe that Israel not only had a right to defend itself after the terror attack on October the 7th, but a fundamental duty to its people.
All right, so here's the interesting question here that Candace Owens raises. And let's look at two sides of it. On the one hand, Israel's bashed every day by world media. It's shocking the degree to which Israel is bashed day and night by world media. Guilty, 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 guilty. Where do you think people get the impression that Israel's guilty of genocide from? Where do they get the impression that Israel's an apartheid state? Where do they get the impression that Israel's this demonic power trying to take over the world? It's this bad reporting and all kinds of attacks, conspiratorial loon theories, etc. It's all out there. And if you get closer to home, go to left-wing Jewish websites that attack Israel day and night. Go to Haaretz, which is a historic, long-term publication in Israel, and radically left-wing, militantly attacking the Netanyahu government, whichever way it turns. Read that. This is the Israeli press attacking its own people. There's no nation you're going to find on the planet that's more self-critical. The watchdog organizations within Israel accusing Israel of war crimes, etc. So there's no question that there's all this freedom to attack and criticize. Israel's totally self-critical, and Israel gets bashed from the left and from the right day and night. On the other hand, is there a sensitivity about anti-Semitism? Yes, and rightly so. Just like the race card can be played too much in America, but hey, we got a bad track record, a miserable track record with slavery and segregation dominating so much of our history. So you can understand why we need to be careful with race-related rhetoric. It's the same way when Jew hatred around the world is surging, when it's at levels as high as or higher than leading up to the Holocaust and during the Holocaust in terms of world attitudes, when Muslims are chanting, not all Muslims, obviously, but Muslims in Sydney, Australia, just 3 days after October 7th, they're chanting gas the Jews, when students on campuses like Columbia are saying, we're all Hamas, when people are saying that the Palestinians have the right to resist on any level, meaning go ahead and slaughter women, children, babies, innocent, elderly, go ahead and wipe them out, rape them, do whatever you want. You have the, after all, you're an oppressed people. When you've got that fabric of rhetoric, when you've got vile anti-Semites with millions of followers pouring out their propaganda on TikTok, etc., I'd say we do well to be responsible in our criticism. And I've got major issues with parts of the Netanyahu government. I'd love to see major changes come there as well. I can speak that freely, others do. So let's put this in perspective.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Interacting with some clips, Pierce Morgan and Candace Owens. I know the general content, but I'm hearing them specifically the first time so I can react spontaneously. And we've got to be careful throwing around charges, you're an anti-Semite, you're a racist, you're a bigot, etc., whichever direction they go. Let's be circumspect, let's be fact-based as much as possible, but let's do our best to sort these issues out. I was on Piers Morgan, 10 years ago or something, talking about gay issues, so I would imagine he doesn't know me from Adam. Candace Owens, to my knowledge, doesn't know me from Adam. I know some of the folks at Daily Wire where she used to work, and of course, Rabbi Shmuley, with whom she has butt heads for a couple of years now, and they've been quite aggressive with one another. I know Rabbi Shmuley well, but we've never discussed Candace. So I'm just a Jewish believer in Jesus here with a vested interest in what's happening in Israel, weighing in, sharing some thoughts. They're taking calls today, but I'm going to respond to some questions that were posted earlier on X. Hey, one question. Do you know about our Real Messiah website where we have full-length content of debates I've had with rabbis for free, where we have answers to the 100 most common objections to Jesus in either video or written form, where we have our outreach series, Think It Through, that was filmed on location in places like Brooklyn and Beverly Hills. A great, great resource to learn, and a great resource for any Jewish person you're talking to who has questions. Say, hey, go to realmessiah.com, realmessiah.com. That is through your generosity and help we're able to do it. We've got our first 10 or 11 videos or so demolishing some of the misinformation of counter-missionary Rabbi Tovia Singer, and God willing, we'll keep putting those out. So check it out, realmessiah.com. All right, let's listen to clip number three, Candace Owens on Piers Morgan Uncensored.
Now, to be clear, I am consistent on all matters. I do not want America involved whatsoever in anything that is happening in Israel. I don't want my dollars sent over to Israel. We should not be supporting Israel. Obviously, Thomas Massie has done a lot of work showing how it doesn't even make economic sense that we have so much debt and yet we're sending money over to support Israel. And the biggest issue, by the way, that I have with Israel and talking about them being above reproach is the fact that they are supplying the arms to murder Christians. Okay. In Armenia, the oldest Christian country in the world, and yet nobody talks about that. For whatever reason, it seems to be the circumstance that when Jewish people die in Israel, it's wall-to-wall coverage. But when Christians die all over the world, nobody talks about it.
All right, so two separate issues. Why is there wall-to-wall coverage when Jews die in Israel? Well, there's normally wall-to-wall coverage when enough Jews die in Israel, such as October 7th, when more Jews were killed in any one day since the Holocaust, an absolutely barbaric, mind-bogglingly evil massacre. And if you do the numbers on it, one that would be the equivalent, compare the population of the United States to the population of Israel, and the number of people killed and taken hostage, it would be the equivalent of 9/11 over and over and over and over and over in a single day, plus maybe, 10,000 Americans taken hostage, something like that, to Afghanistan. You better believe there's going to be wall-to-wall coverage of something like that. The whole nation has been traumatized. The whole nation impacted. Everybody knows somebody who's in the war or been in the war or was killed or was taken hostage. It's just that devastating for a relatively small country like Israel. Otherwise, Israelis get stabbed or you're not hearing about it all the time unless you're following Jewish-related news. Now, Candace Owens is 100% right that there's not adequate reporting on Christians being killed worldwide. I mean, I've been one shouting out about that for years, and other Christian ministries, that's the whole thing they focus on. But I've raised the question of, okay, what about the killing of tens of thousands of Nigerians in recent years? Nigerian Christians slaughtered by Boko Haram, slaughtered by Fulani herdsmen. Well, it's territorial disputes. No, it is radical Islam seeking to wipe out Christians. You can add in territorial disputes, but that is not the main issue. It is persecution for the faith. All the Christians who have been slaughtered in Sudan and the Christians who are slaughtered in other parts of the world, the Christians who are being slaughtered in parts of India, and then the extraordinarily difficult situations Christians have had to survive in North Korea. There's very little talk about it. And when, you know, the whole world gets upset over the death of George Floyd, by all means, be outraged and investigate what happened. But what about blacks being slaughtered in Africa? Why don't we care about those individuals? Is it because it's too far away? Is it because they're Christian? So that's unrelated. That's unrelated to the question of what Israel does and doesn't do. Completely unrelated. And let me also say this, that the question of economic support for Israel or sending weapons to Israel, remember, Israel plays a stabilizing role in the Middle East. How did ISIS come into power? And what created a lot of further stability in the Middle East? Well, it's when we took out Saddam Hussein. Now, many felt it was the right thing to do, and the whole idea of that if you're going to be the friend of my enemy, then you're my enemy. So when Afghanistan is not going to give over the Taliban, and when Saddam Hussein is going to stand with them, et cetera, and now, okay, and allegedly weapons of mass destruction being hidden there. So we went after Saddam Hussein, Iraq, whether you thought it was a good war, bad war. The fact is we did it. Taking him out, though, massively destabilized the region and has cost the displacement of hundreds of thousands of Christians as a result. So Israel does play a stabilizing role in the Middle East, and for good reason, we are allies. Now, the whole question of how much support we should send overseas when we're in debt, that's a whole question, and I don't talk about it a lot because I'm not expert in it. But to be clear, Israel has never intentionally sold weapons to foreign countries with the intent of killing Christians, or specifically knowing if we send these to you, then these will be used for killing Christians. There have been territorial disputes. Israel's gotten involved. Okay, I think it's more pragmatic to stand with you versus you. And then the regime they're standing with ends up using those weapons and Christians die. That was not Israel's intent. And I have colleagues who have met face-to-face with leaders in Armenia and said Israel failed when they did not officially recognize the Armenian genocide in recent years and asked for forgiveness of the Armenian people. Or one of my colleagues met with someone who said it was weapons, was it Azerbaijan? Forgive me if I get this wrong. But Israel sold weapons. Those weapons were then used to fight against Christians. Christians died. And here's one of my Messianic Jewish friends in Israel meeting with someone who says, my family was killed by those weapons that came from your country. And of course, he asked their forgiveness. And I'm talking about the type of thing of washing people's feet and asking forgiveness. But it was never Israel's intent to do that. And to give the idea that Israel is now this power that is standing behind killing Christians, that is not true or accurate. It's a misleading picture. And we need to be careful in the pictures that we paint. Okay, got two more clips we're going to play and then go to your questions on the other side of the break. I have not been asked to interact with Piers Morgan on this or to interact with Candace Owens on this. Like I said, for all I know, they've got no clue who I am. I'd be glad to, but right now all I'm doing is responding as I've been asked to in the most constructive way. Now, I'm not bringing a charge against Candace Owens and calling her an anti-Semite. I'm not defending comments she's made. I'm not agreeing with Piers Morgan and disagreeing here. I'm just weighing in on comments that have been made and let the chips fall where they may on a larger level. But having carefully tracked anti-Semitism worldwide and in America for more than 30 years, having tracked anti-Semitism in church history and to this day where it exists among professing Christians, having looked at right-wing supremacist anti-Semitism and left-wing radical anti-Semitism, I do have something to say. I do have strong convictions about this. And of course, beyond all of that, what does the Bible say about God's plan and purpose for Israel? All right. I wasn't going to give out the phone number, but I'm not taking calls. So encouragement again. If you've never visited our Jewish outreach website, it is realmessiah.com. Realmessiah.com. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Shalom, shalom. Michael Brown, so blessed to be with you. Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And as always, shout out of appreciation to our co-sponsor, Trivita, for their wonderful wellness products, which we encourage you to check out for yourself. And when you do, make sure you use the code BROWN25. If you go to trivita.com, use the code BROWN25. Gets you the best discount and gets 100% of your first order donated to the Line of Fire so we can reach more people on more stations. Okay, a couple more clips. I want to interact with Candace Owens and Piers Morgan. This is a segment where they're talking about Israel. Candace Owens, for comments that were considered anti-Semitic stances she took, was ultimately removed from Daily Wire. A lot of controversy surrounding it. I was actually surprised when the thing became personal between her and Ben Shapiro and various things were exchanged back and forth. I was surprised she stayed on as long as she did. Her view would be, hey, they always say they want different opinions and so on, but I'm not entering into the rightness and wrongness of her being dismissed, simply interacting with comments that she had on Piers Morgan. Doing our best to play some representative ones. As I've been asked by some colleagues, what do I think about this? here we go. So, got two more clips. This one's about 1 minute, 45 seconds. Let's listen together.
The final question I'll ask you on this issue of the Daily Wire centers around the Christ is King, because it had long been a core slogan of people like Nick Fuentes and other, for want of a better phrase, white supremacists, white nationalists, whatever you want to call them. The Daily Wire co-founder Jeremy Boring said on X, "How is saying Christ is King anti-Semitic? The same way anything becomes anti-Semitic when it's used for the purpose of expressing anti-Semitism. It's like asking, how does a shovel become a murder weapon when it's used to murder someone? This isn't hard. A shovel is not innately a murder weapon. Saying Christ is King is not innately anti-Semitic. It's all about how a thing is used. Saying Christ is King for an evil purpose, like using it as a weapon to express your hatred or disdain for the Jews, is a grave sin. God will not be mocked. Invoking him in vain self-promotion or to troll Jews or to attack your political rivals is to carry forth his name in vain." What would your response be to that?
My response would be that I am an unapologetic free market capitalist. I think Jeremy Boring, as the co-CEO of Daily Wire, went to the market with his idea on Christ is King. And the market has a right to respond. They believe in what he's saying, and they think that what he is saying is true and is right, then they will support the Daily Wire and they will support their mission. If they believe that it is wrong, then they will stop supporting the Daily Wire. I can't speak on behalf of Jeremy Boring. You'd have to book him and he can talk more about him, his belief that Christ is King. It can be used like a shovel to murder people. You know, what I would say for me is I don't agree with that. And so if you find me saying Christ is King to be abhorrent, same thing. You don't have to support me. You don't have to follow me. But let me tell you, I'm going to continue to declare that Jesus Christ is the King of Kings.
All right. So what was missing in the context there, just in the clip we played, is the background to the idea that Christ is King can be anti-Semitic. So if you've missed my comments on this, if you've missed my public rebuke of Nick Fuentes, then let me take a moment and explain. Christ is the Greek way of saying Messiah, Christos in Greek, Mashiach in Hebrew. Messiah is King. By very definition, Messiah is King. Jesus Christ in Christian terms, Jesus Christ in Messianic terms, Yeshua the Messiah, is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He was born King of the Jews. He died King of the Jews. He'll return as King of the Jews. So can I, from the rooftops, shout, Christ is King, Mashiach hu HaMelech, Messiah is the King? Can I, in Hebrew, he's referred to as Melech HaMashiach, King Messiah. Can I shout that from the rooftops? Christ is King, Messiah is King. Yes, yes, loudly, clearly, it is gloriously true. Have people used that in an anti-Semitic way? Yes, sadly, they have. And that's what Jeremy Boring was responding to. So there's a Nick Fuentes video that we played where he's talking about, got to get rid of the Jews, get them out of power. This is a Christian nation after all, and the Jews are responsible for all this evil in the country. And then ultimately there's going to be a holy war, and it's going to be us against the Jews, but we'll win, meaning the Christians, because we're willing to die for our cause, and they're not. But hey, the fact is we're not going to die because God's with us. And I mean, it's really ugly, it's dangerous, it's vile, it's despicable. But as he's saying these things, the audience starts chanting, Christ is King, Christ is King. So there is no question it has been weaponized. There's no question, just like a cult uses the Bible to deceive people and bring them into bondage. So you can take the Bible and use it to destroy people's lives by misusing it. So this mantra, this Christ is King chant, has been used in very wrong and destructive ways. And the first time I saw a clip or a post from Candace Owens, I don't follow her, but the first time I saw a post that was brought to my attention, and she and Ben Shapiro were going at it, I believe that was the context, and she said, Christ is King. When I saw that, I thought, why here? That's a weird place to put it. It sounded like this, in Nick Fuentes' case, this right-wing white supremacist Catholic anti-Semitism chanting Christ is King. Just like the Crusaders, according to historians of the day in 1099, burned down the great synagogue in Jerusalem with the Jews inside of it, slaughtered the Jews, burned them alive as they marched around the synagogue singing, Christ, we adore thee, with the cross emblazoned on their uniforms, which is what a lot of Jews know about church history, sadly. So I agree 100% that we should freely, from the heart, without any restriction, proclaim that Christ is king, that Messiah is king, that he is king and Lord and Savior, that we believe it, we'll live for it, we'll die for it. It's our heart, it's our soul, it's what we hold to, it's what Scripture teaches. No one's going to stop me from saying it. At the same time, I will call out those who use it in wrong ways. So if Candace Owens says she's just proclaiming what we know to be true, Christ is king, praise God. If it means what the anti-Semites mean, or if it's used in that context or related to it, then it's fair to call that out. So that's all that is being said. Okay, last clip, about 2 minutes long.
Nick Fuentes, who is a Holocaust denier, supported you in what he said was your full-fledged war against the Jews. He said, this is the face of a total Jewish defeat. We effing got your back, Candace. They're filth. What would you say to that?
I would never, ever, ever describe Jewish people as a whole as filth. I don't know what the context of that is. Is he referring to the Rabbi Barclay interview? But just to be clear, on my record here, I have had wonderful relationships with Jewish people all throughout my life. Before I was at Daily Wire, I was at PragerU, Dennis Prager, Marissa Strait run that company. Marissa Strait is a former IDF soldier. That woman treated me like gold. We never had any issues whatsoever. They were wonderful to me. So I genuinely don't know the context of where or why he said that, but I'm just acknowledging that he said the word filth and that I used the word filth to describe Rabbi Shmuley, who you have had on this show. Mm. And I just want to make it clear to everyone watching that Rabbi Shmuley is in fact a piece of filth.
Right, but you would not support a full-fledged war against the Jews.
No, no. Or any, by the way, I also would not support a full-fledged war against Muslims. I'm not supporting a full-fledged war against Christians. And there are some full-fledged wars being launched against Christians.
So do you feel uncomfortable? So a reasonable question is, do you feel uncomfortable about having support from people like Nick Fuentes then?
I think it is a absolute nonsense for people. I have on Twitter alone 5.5 million followers. I think it's pointedly ridiculous when people do this and they find a comment and they go, do you feel uncomfortable about the fact that this person said this? Mm. What I'm not going to do is respond to this tactic of pretending that I'm somehow responsible for the 20 million followers and that I should be knowing what they are saying on their private platforms or their personal platforms or their public platforms every minute of every day.
Right. So, of course, she's 100% right. I have a fraction of the followers she has, right? Maybe combined, I don't know, close to a million or something like that. But it's a fraction. And obviously, I've got no clue what people are saying day and night. And I've got a fraction of the comments coming my way. I mean, maybe if you look at all the articles that are posted in other places, there's more. But whatever. I've got a much less of a public figure in the secular world than Candace Owens is. Right. So, of course, you can't be responsible for what people say. The question is, has she ever said anything positive about Nick Fuentes? That would be the question, right? Or, for example, in a case like this, why not say, I completely repudiate Nick Fuentes? Yeah, you're not responsible for someone following you. The question is, why does he say he's got her back? Got her back in what? Got her back in what battle against the Jews? That's what I want to know. What if I had someone standing with me and say, Dr. Brown, we've got your back on taking down the Vatican and exposing the Pope. It's like, well, when have I been majoring on taking down the Vatican or attacking the Pope? Yeah, I'm not Catholic. I have differences with the Vatican and the Pope. But when has that ever been my emphasis? Why would you be saying you have my back there? That's the bigger question. And if someone says, well, so-and-so from this particular group, they say thus and such, and I know this person to be a blasphemer or a heretic or something, I would say I completely repudiate them. Why not just say that? That's the thing that I think I was looking for. As for her calling Rabbi Shmuley filth, well, he's had more than his, he can defend himself, and he's had more than his share of attacks on Candace Owens, and he was very pleased to see her go from Daily Wire and took some credit for it, whether it's true or not. So I'll let the two of them battle things out. That being said, it's what I didn't hear that concerns me, and those are issues I would love to see clarified more in the days to come. And now, some people give me more credit than I deserve. Well, Dr. Brown, just talk to these people. Well, I do have a lot of friends in the larger Christian world and Jewish world that are influential and so on. But it's not just, it's not just pick up the phone. Okay, I'll call Candace Owens. Like I said, she probably doesn't know me from Adam. Or, hey, I was on Piers Morgan's show 10 years ago. Yeah, like 1,000 other people were. I'll just talk to him. So I'd gladly interact with all different folks. You know, or yeah, I knew some folks that are very close to President Trump, but he doesn't know me from Adam, nor did I have any aspiration of ever meeting with him or talking to him. I figure I got folks that know him. If they've been preaching the gospel to him and calling him to account for years and years and years, my voice is not going to add anything to it, but he doesn't know me from Adam. So I was like, oh, yeah, let me just call and pick up the phone and call this political leader. We'll call this leader, media leader. I'd love to do it. If I had the relationship with him, I would. So I'm not interacting here to pick a fight with someone or to level criticism as much as to say, these are constructive interactions I'm seeking to bring so that we can sort these things through. So let us not just fling around terms like anti-Semite, Jew hater, etc. Just like we shouldn't fling around terms like racist or bigot or homophobe. Let's really look at issues. Let's try to dig down deeper. And where we can have constructive conversations in non-volatile ways, we're not waging war. It's the same thing in the body. Let's sit and have those conversations. Let's do our best to constructively understand one another. All right, we'll be back and answer some of your questions.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, absolutely delighted to be with you. I'm going to respond now to some questions that were posted on X, Jewish-related questions. My name is Greg asks, why is shashuka so tasty? I've never had it. Sorry to say I've never had it. The picture looks intriguing, but I've never had it, so I can't I know it was profound. I know you were like, oh, Dr. Brown, I need an answer. Yeah, just having fun. No, sorry, you're having fun. I don't know that I've ever seen it or encountered it. Joseph, as a believer who wants to dive deep in his word, I'm almost 40 years old and would love to learn Aramaic to dive deeper into the meaning of Scripture. Since your degree specializes in this, how does a novice start to learn Scripture in its manuscript form? I'm sure there are blessings behind this. Number one, I would not make Aramaic the first language I learn. When it comes to Old Testament, there are only a few portions in Aramaic, the longest being Daniel chapter 2, verse 4 to Daniel chapter 7, verse 28. Otherwise, you've got some sections in Ezra and Nehemiah, and then you've got Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 11, and you've got two words in Genesis 31. So Aramaic is only found a little bit in the Hebrew Bible. In the New Testament, yes, Aramaic would have been the most common home family language for a Jewish person in Galilee, so Yeshua and his disciples. Hebrew could have been used in different contexts. But the New Testament was written in Greek, translated into Aramaic, but written in Greek. So if I wanted to learn Old Testament, I'm learning Hebrew. If I want to learn New Testament, I'm learning Greek. And there are plenty of ways to do that little by little. It takes an investment of years to really learn it well, but you still get some nice insights along the way. And for example, if you could learn with online classes, you could get grammars with used to be DVDs, probably just streaming content now. So though there are plenty available like that, but why not start with a larger question of how do I really understand the Bible better and get into context? There's an old book reissued, many different editions, How to Study the Bible for All It's Worth. When I mean old, I mean a few decades, then reprinted, updated. How to Study the Bible for All It's Worth, Douglas Stewart, Gordon Fee. How to Study the Bible for All It's Worth. Start there and then see if you get more inspiration to dig deeper and learn the languages thereafter. Daniel, how many significant ancient Jewish Israeli cities are in Gaza, West Bank, or other entities today? Well, by entities, I guess you mean disputed territories. So the disputed territories are Gaza and what would be called the West Bank. So, Daniel, here's the simplest way to answer your question. West Bank of the Jordan is Judea Samaria. So how many significant cities are there? Ancient Samaria, ancient Hebron, or etc.? This is ancient Judea Samaria. How about Bethlehem, the birthplace of the Messiah? the birthplace of David. So those are just some of the cities there. That's why that Christian Zionists, Messianic Jews, Israelis living within in the land were referred to as Judea Samaria rather than the West Bank, because it's part of the historic homeland and heartland of the Jewish people. Gaza, of course, the famous Philistine cities of Ashkelon and Ashdod, Gaza itself, Gaza, in, as it would have been pronounced in the ancient world. So those are there. But during the time of King David and Solomon, Israel took over the territory as part of the Israelite kingdom then. So those would have been ancient Jewish cities as well. Septem, I've heard that the Septuagint maintains a more accurate reading of the other older Hebrew texts. Are there any places where the Hebrew text is more accurate and trustworthy than the Septuagint? Yeah, so what you've heard is the opposite of the truth. What you've heard is the opposite of the truth. Septuagint, just go back, go to thelineoffire.org or to our YouTube channel, The Line of Fire, and just search back, put in the word Septuagint, search for the word Septuagint. You'll find a show where I got into this in depth at the beginning, so I won't repeat it all now. The Septuagint is a translation of the Hebrew. So our starting point is the Hebrew, not the Septuagint. The Septuagint is a translation. Here and there, the Septuagint reflects a more accurate Hebrew original, which we know now because it was found, say, a fragment in Dead Sea Scrolls, where it's confirmed in multiple other versions and attestations. But otherwise, the Hebrew is the foundation. The Hebrew is the beginning. The Septuagint is translation of the Hebrew. Now, here and there, the Hebrew text has been redacted, or because you have thousands of manuscripts, just like with the Greek New Testament, you have to sort out which is the best original reading. But the Septuagint is a translation. The Hebrew is the original. Here and there, there are cases where the Septuagint maintains, preserves a more accurate reading. And for the most part, modern Bible translations will tell you that in a footnote, that the Masoretic tradition says this, but Septuagint, Dead Sea Scrolls, Peshitta, Vulgate all say this. You say, contextually that makes more sense. It's more accurate reading. So it's the actual opposite. But for more depth, go to thelineoffire.org, type in Septuagint, or our YouTube channel, The Line of Fire, type in Septuagint. Alana, explain what happened with the tribe of Dan in the Bible. Many conflicting sources. Well, the big issue would be that Dan is missing from the list of the 12 tribes in Revelation, the 7th chapter. And the question is why. But otherwise, as a tribe, I don't know that there's that much dispute about what happened in the Old Testament. They continued as a tribe. There are some ungodly things they did. But it's like Simeon, kind of, they get scattered in Judah and seem to disappear scattered in Israel, disappear into the territory of Judah, but still considered part of the 10 tribes. And what happens to Simeon is more mysterious. The only real mystery with Dan is that it's not included in the list there in Revelation 7, which there are various viewpoints for that, various arguments about that. Again, just looking for Jewish-related questions. Professor Gaiman, talk. How do Jews feel about the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem? If Jews need the temple in order to make sacrifices, how will they even reinstate the law with a Muslim holy site on the temple grounds? Your average Israeli doesn't think about that at all. That's meaningless to them. So what? Muslims are there. They've been there for centuries. So since the 7th century, whatever. The Dome of the Rock, Al-Aqsa Mosque, and let Muslims have access to it and live in peace, and we'll have access to our holy sites and the Christians to their holy sites, and let's get along. That's your average Israeli. They're not even thinking about it. Well, what about the rebuilding of the temple? Your average Israeli is not thinking at all about the rebuilding of the temple. It's on their horizon. It's on their mind. It's not a focus. Not at all. Not at all. What about ultra-Orthodox Jews? Your average ultra-Orthodox Jew is praying for the Messiah to come and be revealed. And one of the things he'll do is rebuild the temple. So when he's revealed, it'll happen. But they're not focused on it. It's a very small group of right-wing conservative Jews, some now in the Netanyahu government, who are talking about this, which would mean somehow the removal of Dome of the Rock. How in the world could that be without a massive world war with Islam? I don't know. There's the Joel Richardson theory that there'll be an Islamic antichrist, and he'll barter with Israel and say, tell you what, we'll remove the Dome of the Rock, you can rebuild the temple. That will be part of why Israel follows him as an antichrist. Hey, it's as good a theory as anything. The Bible doesn't tell us. You can only speculate. I don't have an answer as to how it's going to happen, other than some kind of final war and destruction of Dome of the Rock and building of the temple. But even then, it's going to be cataclysmic. So I don't know how it's going to happen. I do believe there'll be a third temple before Jesus returns, and it'll be part of a final end time deception, etc., before a glorious temple in the millennial kingdom. But that's, we're still speculating. It's future stuff, and we can't be super dogmatic about it. But your average Israeli is not thinking about it. They're not thinking about blood sacrifices, not thinking about the rebuilt temple. There are some who argue that the original temple was not exact in that exact area, so it can be rebuilt, but that's a very, very small minority opinion. Contra Fidelis, why won't you accept Galatians clearly teaches that Christians are true Jews and the church is Israel? Because Galatians doesn't teach it. Not a syllable in Galatians teaches that. The whole book of Galatians is against that. It's, you're not Jews. You don't have to live as Jews. If you're a Gentile Christian, you're not a Jew. You're not called to be a Jew. You don't have to live as a Jew. We are all children of Abraham, Jew and Gentile. He doesn't say Gentiles are Jews and Jews and Gentiles. He says that just like there are no men and women. I have a question for you. Are there men and women in your church? Are there men's rooms and women's rooms? Are there males and females? Are there men's groups and women's groups? Are there women giving birth to children and men producing children, but not the reverse? Okay, but Paul says there's neither male nor female. What does he mean by that? What he means is that we're equal in the Lord, that we're equally sons and daughters of God, that there's no class distinction, there's no caste distinction. We are one in the Messiah. But of course those divisions still exist in terms of different people. What about neither slave nor free? Were there slaves and free in Paul's day? Yes, but in the Messiah we're equal. The same with neither Jew nor Gentile. Jews and Gentiles still exist. And Paul explicitly says, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning verse 17, if you're called, meaning saved, circumcised, don't become uncircumcised. You're a Jew, continue to live as a Jew. That's fine. If you're saved uncircumcised, don't become circumcised. And what does Paul write to the Christians in Rome, in Romans 11? I'm writing to you Gentiles because I want you to provoke Israel to envy. He doesn't call them Israel. You say, what about Galatians 6:16? Galatians 6:16 proves my point. Because at the end of the book, Paul says that peace upon all who follow this rule and on the Israel of God. To translate even the Israel of God is a very minority view in terms of modern translations and minority usage of the Greek chi, which is otherwise and, overwhelmingly and, unless there's a better reason to read it as even, which is not the case here. So it's peace upon all who follow this rule and upon the Israel of God, most likely meaning Jewish believers in Yeshua. In other words, even though I've written this whole letter to you, Paul saying, not to come under the Torah, not to try to become Jews, not to be circumcised, I've written this whole letter to you, warning you, urging you. I'm not throwing Jewish believers under the bus. And what does he say? If you're circumcised, you're obligated to keep the whole law. So if you get circumcised, you got to live the whole law. He's saying you don't have to. You're saved by grace. That's what I'm preaching. It seems that you want to violate what Galatians is saying. I'm holding to it. It's grace through faith. Gentiles do not become Jews, and Jews do not become Gentiles. We're one in the Messiah.